This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Portland, if you've ever wondered where to get your Blazers, Ducks, and Bees, it's right here on the airwaves of 1080. 1080 The Fan with Danny and Dusty. It's Danny and Dusty and Rust from noon till 3.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for being part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it's on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AM, the fan, or youtube.com/1080AM, the fan. Party on, you party animals. Thanks for being a part of it. If you're listening on Odyssey, yay, you could be entering right now for our Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. It's easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log on, and listen to 1080 The Fan or any of the other participating stations. Don't know why you would listen to any other ones except for 1080. But listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. The winner of this national contest gets travel for four. That's winner plus three guests and a five-night hotel stay at Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas's premium sports viewing destination and home of the biggest March hoops party at the Stadium Swim. Plus, you get $5,000 for each of your party for the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball championships. Come back each day and listen for another hour to add another chance to win. For more info, go to 1080thefan.com. It's right around the corner, dude. And we're going to talk about this coming up here in a few minutes. You went to Eugene. You watched Oregon-Rutgers, which highlighted two of the top prospects
indeed
in college basketball, in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. So I want to get your thoughts on that because that was it was a game.
A basketball game was played.
Blowout. Really got – and at the end – we'll talk about it. Yeah. Oregon could have really piled on.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Over the weekend, we saw Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports. He really unloaded on what could be a big, big change, a seismic change in the world of college football. So tomorrow, the Big Ten and the SEC athletic directors are all going to meet up in New Orleans, Louisiana.
The Lords of the Dark Arts.
That's right. And they are going to discuss the future of the college football playoff and kind of really what could be a landscape change for the NCAA as well. Because what happened last year was the 10 conferences that run college football and Notre Dame, they ceded power to the Big Ten and the SEC for the college football playoff moving forward and said, you guys can set the rules and play by the rules. We'll all have to approve it. But you guys are in charge of it now. And what the SEC and Big Ten are up to is we could see a college football playoff expanded to 14 or 16 teams by as early as 2026. So one more year of the 12-team playoff and then another round of expansion coming.
Ring every drop. Wring every last drop out of it.
Yeah. Well, playing by those their own rules and kind of setting the guardrails here, the Big Ten and the SEC, what Dellinger's reporting is that it could be a situation where the Big Ten and the SEC each get four.
Half the field of 16.
Automatic bids. Four automatics go to the Big Ten and the SEC. The rest of the bids, that goes to the other conferences where you could have two from the ACC, two from the Big 12. So the other Power Four conferences get additional spots. One from the Group of Five. And then if it's a 14-team playoff, then you get one at large, which is likely Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a 16-team field, then you get three at-large bids.
Which but if you're going to do the three at-larges.
Yeah, just go to 16 and no buys just whatsoever.
Just skip it.
Because the top two seeds would get a buy in this format. If you went 16, you would have no buys, but everybody gets a home game.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy.
And as we saw the first round of playoff, home games are lit.
And people are saying that like this could become divisive within the world of college football. And the, you know, there's a quote in there of somebody said, you're going to alienate part of the country no matter what happens in this. Dellinger posted the, if you do like a rolling average of what this has looked like over the last handful of seasons, on average, in a 14 team playoff, if you just took the rankings of the college football playoff committee, the Big Ten would average 4.6 bids in a 14-team playoff, and the SEC would average a 4.7 bids, just if you just went by the rankings. And the Big 12 would be at 2.1, the ACC at 1.8, the Group of Five would be at 0.27, and Notre Dame would be at 0.45. So if you look at it in those terms, what they're proposing, it would make sense for four automatic bids, right? Will it be like that every year? No, everybody would complain that, you know, Iowa would get into the college football playoff as the fourth best team from, you know, the Big Ten. And there was a third team from the ACC or the Big 12 one year that deserved to get in. But, you know,
that's where three at-large bids to me make
more
sense.
At a 16 team playoff, you're not alienating anybody.
No, it's 16,
point.
Man. If you ain't there, you ain't there.
But where the alienating comes from is the amount of money that the Big Ten and the SEC would be getting.
Guaranteed.
Over the other two power conference teams. I mean, it's a lot of cash that they'd
When you're guaranteeing eight spots and, you know, 40 each, that's a lot of money, man.
Those things, I think every single person here is like, well, we knew this was going to happen. Right? Like, you see this coming, the expansion of the playoff to 14 or 16 teams. Yeah. Do I think it's too many teams? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I do. But we all saw that this was coming down the
pipeline. The second we saw this, we were like, just get to it already.
What it could do, though, I think there are two big things that could come from this that Dellinger points out in his article. One is that this would force the SEC to have nine conference games.
Dun, 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 dun.
Because the SEC is saying, well, wait a minute. We don't want to play nine conference games because that would, you know, hinder some of our teams getting in. Well, when you get four automatic qualifiers, that argument goes away. And that argument is gone. And nobody can argue with that. And the SEC would then be open to playing a ninth conference game. What it also would do is, there have been talks that have been ongoing between the Big Ten and the SEC to have a matchup every single year. A crossover. This is something I've been saying needs to happen for years. There's a great way that you can do it.
Pool play it.
But yeah, you could sit there and whatever network, and they would go and they'd sell this off as its own television deal.
Yes.
And
it kind of becomes like an in-season tournament almost kind of a deal.
You would make millions, whatever network, if you had a draft where, again, you flip a coin, who gets the first pick, in which conference does, and then from there on out, you go, all right, Big Ten, you get home field, you pick who you're playing.
And
you go back and forth all the way down, you seed it out one
versus Champions one. The Champions League does a draw live on TV where a guy reaches into the bag and pulls the name out.
I think, yeah, like the Champions League draw, but then you'd have like, you have the opportunity of Vanderbilt versus Oregon. Like what I'm saying is you go, nope, we put our best on our best and we seed this thing down all the way down, the line.
I'm saying like you have like a top five in each.
Yeah.
And then you have the bottom five each, whatever. Like yeah, you break it up into brackets.
You have tiers.
Yeah.
You have each conference says, all right.
Based on the year before.
We are going to – no, you don't always want to do that.
That's true.
Especially with the turnover in college football. No, you
projection.
You go into that meeting and the SEC doesn't know what is in tier one bag for the Big Ten and vice versa. And you have like three tiers.
They slot their own.
You slot your own and it's based on ADs and coaches say, mm-hmm. we feel we are in the top tier of the Big Ten, middle tier, bottom tier. And then you have those three tiers and boom, you just do the random draw for each tier. I'm in on that.
What if you're Indiana?
I'm so in on that.
And you come into this year and you're talking spicy and your conference is sitting there going.
Nobody would have put them in the top tier. But, they would have said no.
But this is what I'm saying. Not. And if you're Indiana, you go in there and you pound the table of like, no.
Yeah.
We are a top tier team. Put us in that bag.
Google me.
And maybe there's a team in there that's a little down. Let's say it's Iowa. And they're like, you know what? We feel more comfortable being in the middle tier. And all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Nobody but the board knows who's in each bag. And then all of a sudden, somebody reaches into that tier one bag for the Big Ten. Indiana is up on the board.
Dude.
People are going, what?
You got
And then
me
they
on
have
this.
The season that they have, and they go down. Let's say they face off against Ole Miss, and they beat Ole Miss.
How about this? We do this in October.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a bye week that the Big Ten and the SEC say, we will not play on this week. So everybody else in college football, you get this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is a scheduled bye week across the board. We do the draw at the beginning of that bye week. And then you have the preparations. But then you know, like, Indiana at that point is 5-0 or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, no, they are a tier one team. And then you have the draw. Dude, there's so many ways that they can make this awesome.
You can sell the living crap out of this.
Yeah, the way that they're probably going to do it is like Ohio State will play Vanderbilt. You know, Oregon's going to play Mississippi State. And everybody's going to avoid each other.
Yeah.
But there's potential for it to be great. And that would be awesome.
Yeah.
It would be awesome to have that in the world of college football.
And if you're talking about seeding for the playoff, you win that game.
Yeah.
If you get put in a bracket with the SEC team, and you win that game,
yep.
that gives you a chance to be above them and have the home game.
The other thing that could come of this is it could alter conference championship weekend dramatically. We know that conference championship weekend is not going anywhere because of the fact that it means so much to the conferences for the television money that they get. But here's where it could be altered, and there's a variety of theories of how this could work. That are out there, but one that is gaining some traction is, all right, the Big Ten and the SEC each have, you know, four guaranteed spots, okay? So instead of conference championship weekend, you had Oregon and Penn State play and Georgia and Texas play. Instead of having one and two play against each other, that week you would have the number four team play the number five team. So for the Big Ten, it would have been Indiana playing Illinois. For the SEC, it would have been Alabama playing Ole Miss. And the winner of that game gets the automatic bid.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, if it's a 16-team playoff, then that the loser of that game, if it's a blowout, you probably aren't getting one of those at-large mm-hmm. bids. You're probably sitting at home. And that, so then you could have a little bit more intrigue there. In the Big 12, right, this past year, it would have been, I think at the end of the season, Arizona State did get the number one seed in the Big 12, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. But you would have had Iowa State playing BYU, or I don't know how their tiebreakers would have gone. You would have had either Iowa State play BYU or BYU play Colorado in the play-in game for the Big 12. I think that adds a lot more intrigue because
yeah.
the loser is not, they're going home.
It's almost weird. The in-season tournament and play-in tournaments in football also work.
Yeah. Yeah. So
putting more value on stuff matters.
In those games between the Big Ten and the SEC, those would be, for a large swath of the conference, you would have an eliminator game, mm-hmm. like right there.
Yes.
Where it's like, you went head-to-head, you lost that game, good luck getting in. So I think it could be, I think it could be good overall for the world of college football. I think that the power vacuum going to the Big Ten and the SEC.
We all know what's happening.
We were heading down that path anyway. But look, they're gonna run the world here soon. And there was also something buried in the Dellinger article over the weekend that the Power Four conferences, they really are starting to peel off from the NCAA because they may ask for control of the college basketball tournament too.
Yep.
Moving forward. And at that point, all bets are off.
Yep.
But you see the tournament may expand to 76 teams?
Yeah, that's where I think it's going to end up.
It's going to, well, yeah. Get ready for it.
Yeah.
Get ready for it.
That's too many.
Hey, you went down to, if there were 76, dude, there's a chance Rutgers might be in it. You went and saw Rutgers and Oregon play over the weekend. Two of the top prospects in this upcoming NBA draft, Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper.
Yep.
They play for the Scarlet Knights. I want to get your thoughts on those two guys because, look, Cooper Flagg getting the number one overall pick, it may be a pipe dream for the Blazers. But both those guys could be on the board for the Blazers wherever they end up drafting. We'll get to that. This is Danny Dusty on The Fan.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Oregon Ducks hosted Rutgers Scarlet Knights over the weekend on Sunday down in Eugene. And a heck of a basketball game. And you were in attendance for it. The 75-57 victory by the Ducks over Rutgers, which got away from Rutgers in a big way in the second half. Good game early, though. It was tight throughout the first half.
Sure. There you go.
Throughout the first half.
There was something there for sure.
Are you adjusting to watching college basketball?
No, I mean I watch a ton of it. This is when I watch tape throughout the year, but basically starting this weekend is when my ramp up starts.
Yep.
For getting ready for March Madness and doing draft prep, and I'll have an article on basically what I'm about to talk about here coming on the Patreon here soon. The whole point of going down there was I get to see two potential top three, top five prospects in the country play live. And that's not common out here. That's just my hope was I was going to be able to go check out Illinois, too, down in Oregon. But they were playing the Lakers the same night. So that wasn't something I could do that night because obviously I've got TV to do. But that was also a night where as bad as Rutgers was that night, Illinois, I think, had their best shooting night in modern history against the Ducks. They shot like 67% from the floor. It was disgusting. But Ace Bailey, 6'9", 6'10", sinewy, rangy forward, score-first mentality. Dylan Harper is a professional point guard. Ace Bailey's never met a shot he didn't like. The questions about him... Or if he's not scoring, what else does he do? He's not a passer at all. He's not a high-level defender. He's an okay rebounder. You probably want more from him in that regard.
Yeah.
But Oregon, and this is where college basketball coaching is so important. Dan Altman is a damn good coach. I think he's terrible with the top-end talent. And I think he's God tier with chip on his shoulder, guys. I think he is a Tom Crean at Marquette type. Get me somebody with some edge. And he's talking about ringing every last dropout. That's what he does. And the game plan that he came in with against Rutgers was Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey are not going to beat us. They went into a zone and they stayed in that zone pretty much the whole game. They took all of the dribble drive action away from Rutgers. Rutgers coaching, not great.
Not good
great.
At all.
Dylan Harper has not seen a defense, I don't think, like that, where they were like, you're not going to get where you want to get. Every time he tried to go into anything pick and roll wise in the half court, they blitzed, they trapped. They did
a good job of making it look like man when he crossed half court. And then all of a sudden they were going, they would drop to 2-3. They went 1-2-2. Mm-hmm. Like they were
the
all
three
over
quarter court press and then dropping in. Like they and Rutgers does this thing where they try to run this egalitarian offense with a ton of like college offense cuts. And it was just like, in the first half, some of the stuff that they did, they started running a lot of floppy action, which that's where you've got two cutters, one going around the baseline, one cutting through the middle of the floor above the free throw line, extended opposite directions. It's the old J.J. Redick kind of motion. We're coming off pin downs on the baseline or exit screens to get open looks. And they got a few of those for the others. It was, even when Ace was running them, he didn't get free all that often. And when he did, he was just chucking. He finished, was it 4-13? Yeah, 4-13, 0-4 from the field. And do you remember the Patrick Ewing clip when he was at Georgetown?
No.
One-legged fall away? Do you practice that shot? That was Ace Bailey's shot chart.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, do you practice that shot?
I will say, offensively, you saw what both of them can bring to the floor. I was not impressed either one on the defensive end of the floor. Athletically, though, it didn't look like either they didn't care or they didn't look like they were staying in front. Jackson Shellstead was running circles around them.
I will say, number one, freshman in college, typically not good defensively, Cooper Flagg notwithstanding. Like, that's the nature of the beast. Very rarely do you have a college freshman who is even a good defender, let alone a great defender.
Yeah, but with the hype, I was expecting more. I expected more because you guys are going to be playing in the NBA next year and you guys are going to be the high-level guys, you kind of have like a little, you see a little chutzpah in it. Mm-hmm. It didn't, with Ace Bailey.
Go watch Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson's tape. It was not good coming in. I did a film session after they drafted Scoot Henderson, going through his for subscribers to the Patreon, and Scoot Henderson's defensive tape was god awful. But I didn't think Harper was that bad. I thought Ace was awful off ball. I didn't think Ace had a wow moment other than like a baseline fadeaway. It was like, yeah, that's a shot that he can hit. Dylan Harper did not have a great game, but there was probably five moments of holy crap.
You see those flashes where you're like,
He had a late in the shot clock, ball gets kicked back out to him, 5 seconds to go, pulls from 28 feet, cash. And I was like, oh. He's only shooting 32% from three on the season, and this isn't making an excuse for him. I think he's a better shooter than the 32%. He's dealt with an ankle. He's had an ankle brace on when he was playing. I think he's probably a 36, 37% three-point shooter.
Injury questions. Blazers going to draft him.
But then he followed that up with a semi-transition, inside-out cross, and then left-handed. He is left-handed. Running floater at like 8 feet the next possession. And you went,
he's got those flashes where you go, oh, I get it.
And his floor game is good. But what was interesting was how he reacted to such intense defensive coverage of getting him off the ball. Anytime I see a young guard go through this, I automatically flash back to Damian Lillard in the New Orleans Pelicans series. And talking to Dame after that, he has said 1,000 times, I needed that to understand how to deal with that pressure. Because you go back and watch that series, Dame got destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, they did unholy things to him with Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo.
No, who was the other guy? Who was there? It was Jrue Holiday and then, oh boy, just absolutely dominate. Small forward. Golly. I can't remember his name.
Etwan Moore?
Yes, Etwan Moore. Yeah. Etwan Moore.
Well, they basically put 4 and 5 sets of eyes.
They should go on password together.
Yeah.
Bodied him.
But the Pelicans said
it was the New Orleans Pelicans. There was 1 year we were
looking
for
this small forward. Etwan Moore.
Yeah. The growth he had to go through, and you saw Harper get flustered because they blitzed and trapped him and made him pick up his dribble. Ace Bailey, he's got a good handle for a guy his size, but Oregon attacked his dribble over and over and over and over again. And it was one of those things where it's like, it stood out. And one, I was talking to some folks during the game, after the game. If you came into that game not knowing who Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey were, would you think that they were NBA prospects, the high level ones? And everybody's like, Dylan, you could see some stuff. Ace, there was a lot of questions, but they have a young freshman, Thomas Somerville, who's, or Lathan Somerville, not Thomas Sorbers at Georgetown. Lathan Somerville, who was 6'8", 6'10", gets up quick, very traditional big, who's a freshman, who looked like probably the best player on the floor for them, and maybe Dylan Grant, but Oregon annihilated them otherwise. And they blew them off the floor because they were, at one point in time, they were 13 of 17 from three. Oregon was. I mean, this thing was over very quickly. And it was like, oh no. But I think a lot of people, if you're local and you're like, oh, if the Blazers end up picking two or three, should they take them? The answer is unequivocally yes. Yes. Now, I'm higher on Dylan than I am on Ace. Mm-hmm. Ace is all about potential. 6'10" kid with a ratchet. It's the same kind of idea of Brandon Miller.
Yeah.
But when I go, my scouting rule, when all things are equal, give me the guy with the size. Like I've said it before the Scoot draft. If it's me, if Brandon Miller or Scoot Henderson are on the table, I'm taking Brandon Miller.
Yeah.
Because I had them as the same tier of prospect. I do not have Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey as the same tier of prospect. I have Cooper Flagg, tier zero.
Which there's a lot on the Athletic article I see on the Vancouver Ford text line, somebody bringing it up. There was a profile on the Athletic over the weekend about Cooper Flagg, and there was a quote going around where he said, shoot, I want to come back for another year. If you read the entirety of the article, Cooper Flagg is not coming back for another year. That is to highlight what his experience at Duke has been like. But maybe the Blazers did rattle off 10 of 12 because they saw that quote was coming down the pipeline. They're like, we're just tank for him next year. We'll just win this year, and then we'll tank for him next year. Cooper Flagg, though, he's going
to. There's a 99.9% chance he goes to the NBA.
Yeah. You don't reclassify to a class not with your twin brother to stay in college for 2 years as your twin brother's playing at Maine. Mm. What you do is you go in the same year and you don't reclassify and you say, if you want me, you're taking my brother Ace with me. And then you go to the NBA after that. You could stay 4 years with him at that point if you wanted to. He reclassified to a year earlier. He should be in high school.
He should be a high school senior. I really want to let that sit in for people. The best player in the country. And it's not a question. Look, Jahni Broome has been good. Cooper Flagg is the best player in the country, and he turned 18 in December. He should be a high school senior. He is a kid giving grown men work. Work.
Yeah, he's going to go in the NBA. He'll be in the NBA.
Outside of Victor Wembanyama in the 15 years I've been doing this, I have never been more certain of a player being great than him.
Oh, look at that. Really?
Wholeheartedly.
All right.
There's never been a kid that I have scouted that has a better mentality than him.
Okay.
And it's just on the Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper, I'm not going to make this crapping on Ace Bailey, but it stood out to me so much. Watching pregame, and this is part of the reason why you go see stuff in person, because this is where you kind of pick up this stuff. How seriously do guys take pregame warmups? How locked in are they? What's the process? Like, Dylan is just going through stuff. He's singing a song that's on the loudspeaker as he's going through it, but there's a lock-in. Ace is throwing lobs to himself off the glass, missing dunks and goofing around. It's like there's a seriousness that is not being there. And that's when you talk about young guys and understanding what it takes to work in the NBA, it is such – and this is not a unique Ace Bailey problem. Mm-mm. It was just something that I have tracked for a year. From back to Hoop Summit, it was something that I noticed there. It was, and a lot of that can be like, well, he's just a happy-go-lucky kid. And it's like, it's all in the eye of the beholder stuff. But like, those are the notes that I'm filing away of like, okay, how do they prepare? How do they get ready? What do they look like during timeouts? How are they acting when they're talking to their coaches? What are they doing when they're talking to their teammates in the dead ball? Like, that's the stuff that you pick up on. You can go watch tape on guys. But you want to see how they look and how they react and all the intrinsic stuff that kind of starts matching up or doesn't matching up with other intel. So,
all right.
But I came away from that going, Dylan had a subpar game, but you saw like five flashes. That's elite. With Ace, it became more about the same questions that I have. And yeah. Maybe that's a bias. Maybe that's something that I already have kind of baked in. But I feel if I'm the Blazers and I get the number two pick in the lottery, I'm feeling significantly more comfortable taking Dylan Harper than I am Ace Bailey.
Okay.
So
that. Now what about Broom, though?
Jahni Broom is a late first, early second guy for me.
Just a great college basketball.
Just a really, look.
His name has been everywhere, though.
No, he's been incredibly productive.
Yeah.
And the insane thing is, from all of like the metrics, Cooper Flagg is the best.
Yeah.
So forget the like what he looks like on tape. The analytics say Cooper Flagg has been the best on both sides of the floor.
Yeah, he's pretty good at basketball.
Yeah, it's disgusting. All right, coming up next on Worst Day on the Web, are you a bald man? You may be entitled to compensation. But first, it's Big Goon himself with the Sports Center update.
Hamburgers, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
It's time for today's Worst Day on the Web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
That sucks.
Jeff?
Yes?
This is not targeted at you.
Oh, God. Don't make me hate you, Daniel.
But according to an employment tribunal, calling a man bald is a sex-related harassment, and you could be entitled to compensation.
Ooh.
In England.
Hey.
In England. That's the catch.
Yeah, freedom of speech here. I can call you baldy.
Tony Finn, who was in line for compensation, had worked for the West Yorkshire-based British Bung Company for almost 20...
Sorry, what now?
Bung. Like, you heard me right. B-U-N-G.
Like TP for your bungholio?
Yes. The great cornholio.
He was fired in May of last year. He took the company to the tribunal claiming, among other things, he had been the victim of sex-related harassment after an incident with the factory supervisor, Jamie King.
Mm.
Finn alleged that during a shop floor row, which is argument or fight, in July of 2019, King referred to him as a bald, see you next Tuesday.
Well, they throw that word around like crazy over there.
Yeah, but I can't say it on the radio.
No, of course not. No, of course not.
Yeah, that word is not nearly as offensive over there as it is here.
No.
I mean,
it's not even the F word over there. It's
no, it's a
verb, an adjective, a noun, whatever you need it to be.
It's like interchangeable with buddy or friend or boss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
And it can also be used as an adjective.
Exactly. The tribunal heard Finn was less upset by the Anglo-Saxon language than the comment on his appearance. The allegation resulted in the panel led by Judge Jonathan Brain. God, I hope the Judge Jonathan Brain was a bald man.
Mm.
Deliberating on whether remarking on his baldness was simply insulting or actually harassment. We have little doubt that being referred to in this pejorative manner was unwanted conduct as far as Finn was concerned. This is strong language, although as we find, industrial language is commonplace on this West Yorkshire factory floor. In our judgment, Mr. King crossed the line by making remarks personal to the claimant about his appearance.
From a quick Google search, old Jonathan Brain,
mm-hmm.
he's got the cul-de-sac hair. He is bald on top.
He's Star Wars dude.
Yeah, he's got a nice little horseshoe going on.
Although
right
I
now.
I realize that reference is lost on Dusty.
Yep.
This was not a fair trial.
No. Do you think he was wearing
the wig?
Do you think he had the wig on and
in
maybe
the parliament?
They do wear them.
And then he like after the trial is over, he takes it off. They're like, demand a retrial.
It's like the end of a Scooby-Doo episode.
He's sitting there. Yeah. It's like, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you, Judge Brain over there. Golly. All right. Well.
The company's lawyer is right to submit that women as well as men may be bald. However, as all three members of the tribunal will vouchsafe, baldness is much more prevalent in men than women. We find it to be inherently related to sex.
Hey, that is true.
See, now, here's where I think that perhaps the Baldman need a little bit more protection.
What about the use of the C word? That's
they just
said over there. That's tossing it around
industrious language. They just excuse that.
We're just gonna gloss over that part of being gender related, and we're gonna go straight to whether you have hair on the top of your head.
Mm-hmm. See, now here's where I think the distinction needs to lie, and it's not in calling somebody names, but in terms of trying to compare it to something in a physical nature, it'd be like
they actually have that.
Well, I was gonna say, and so coming up and rubbing the top of their head to feel mm-hmm. how bald it is, almost like rubbing a pregnant woman's belly.
Okay, so as part of its ruling, the panel raised a previous tribunal case where a man was found to have sexually discriminated against a woman by remarking on the size of her breasts to rebut the firm's point. It is much more likely that a person on the receiving end of such a comment, as that which was made in this case, would be female.
I don't think that's a proper comparison, but...
Nope.
Again.
No.
Nice set of Hooters you got there.
I mean...
It's a mighty fine bald... Hey, look. Some people find bald men more attractive.
Huh.
Some people find bigger cans more attractive.
Well, there's a fetish for everything, right?
Exactly. We don't kink shame here.
Well, we don't. We do not do that. That is something we do not do here.
But I think one thing everybody can agree on is you do not remark on the size of somebody's, breasts.
Yeah, but that is like I'm being creepy compliment when I'm talking about your butt. You know, I guess like the way that you have to frame it is like if he's like, hey, nice dumpy butt, Alice. You know, it's not when you called somebody a bald C word. I think that. There is a little bit of a difference here in the analogies that they were going to, which I think it's not a fair trial with Judge Brain over there having half of his brain exposed with this skullet.
It's tough. It's tough out here.
I should be a British lawyer.
I will say, the other candidate for our worst day on the web today,
yeah.
This headline was just, mwah. Brazil mayor was shot in fake attack for election boost, but still lost in landslide. So he faked a violent mm-hmm. gun-related attack and then ended up getting shot on top of it to get a boost and still lost.
Well, I mean, it's not a page out of the playbook that works every time. You know, you're not going to get those.
That's going deep.
You're not going to get those sympathy votes for getting shot.
That is the Philly special of election politics. you're going deep in the playbook. We're going deep in the playbook to find something here. I mean, you're pulling out all the stops.
This isn't going well. I guess what we could
gotta
shoot
hit the
you.
Nuclear button.
So yeah. That's not good at all.
So, again, if you're a bald man and you find yourself in a disparaging situation, you can keep that one in your back pocket and say in case anybody calls you a bald bleep.
Yeah, or bald anything. Anything. Like you can go ahead and sue, and I'll be your lawyer. I'll make sure that judge is not going to be biased towards you. And I think the big key here is you got to find yourself a Judge Brain. You got to find a Judge Brain who is lacking, is follically challenged as well.
Follically challenged.
But
like that.
Also is willing to make the big leap to, yeah, you call me bald. That's the same as saying Bernice has got a
big old
nice
cans.
Hind end. Yeah. Either way. You just got to find that Judge Brain.
You're the bald
Don't
man
act
just
like
has,
you're not impressed.
Hey, look, the bald man just has one nice big can.
In the States, like, jury tampering would be like, full head of hair, you're off.
Yeah.
Not, just going to use it. He hasn't even said anything. Don't care.
Or you see somebody with plugs, and you're like, oh, you're a traitor. Get out of here.
Yeah, you're like, have you ever had hair restoration treatment?
You look a lot like Brian Urlacher. No. I'm going to need you to go.
You're like right on out of here.
The Seinfeld episode where George learns that Elaine's boyfriend is shaving his head to be bald. And he goes, that's like using a wheelchair for the fun of it.
Yeah, just come on now. Look, Suk was giving me crap for wearing a hat so much when I was growing my hair out just because he was like, look, I can't do that.
There are so many people, though, that when you go to Disneyland and you're looking and you see the guy in the walking boot and you're like, you're just going to the front of the line.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like you may have broke that foot months ago.
Mm-hmm. Still
have. Do you have to send documentation in? Like, you have to have a doctor's note to jump the front of the line at Disneyland?
I will tell you, though, if you're willing to be the guy that walks around Disneyland.
In a boot?
In a boot or on crutches. Go ahead.
You know exactly where you're going in the afterlife.
Oh, look, but even then, if you're willing to do it, go to the front of the line. Because that place is huge, it's hot, and that boot on crutches in the heat around all those people standing around all the time.
You just get the wheelie. You get hell. You push off the. The
No. I'm talking about the crutches guy.
If you're going to be the guy who fakes the injury, you're going to get the wheelie scooter too. And because that's the only way to save it. The only problem would be like somebody comes up and be like, that boot was on your right foot earlier. He's like, yeah, it got hot.
Yeah.
Duh.
You see how sweaty it is? It's gross. All right. Coming up next, we talked about the transition of NFL personnel moving to the college football ranks. Well, the NBA is trying to copy the NFL yet again. There's quite a bit of news around NBA personnel taking a look at the NFL landscape in college basketball and making that shift as well. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. It's a copycat world out there as you're seeing the migration, much like birds in the winter, going north and south, switching between the NFL and college football. But you're also seeing that happen in the NBA and NCAA basketball. Executives are looking around the landscape and seeing, hey, there's 30 openings for a general manager in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
There's 300 of them in college basketball.
Yeah, and it's a slippery slope because the role of a general manager and what you're going to see is a lot of these splashy hires. The role of a general manager in college and the role of a GM in the NBA or the NFL are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And your job requirements are completely different because one of the biggest kind of notches you have to have under your belt in professional sports is you have to know the collective bargaining agreement. Right. The problem with college athletics is there is no collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
There is no agreement put in place.
And in that vein, if I were a betting man, I would bet that one comes to college basketball before it comes to college football, because you're dealing with significantly less people.
I in college basketball?
Yes, you still are.
With
even
300
even
teams?
Even with 300 teams, you're talking about 300 teams of 15 as opposed to 134 of 100.
I think you're not what they're talking about doing is just having a blanket one for all college athletes.
I would expect that's where we ultimately get to, but I think college basketball is going to in a hurry to get there because you as much as the NIL landscape is crazy in college football, the bigger numbers, the bigger singular numbers are coming in college basketball because you're dealing with less people.
But that's where the GM spot, and when you look at whether it's GM or chief of staff, your general manager is supposed to be about roster acquisition, roster retention, and a lot of it is managing everything outside of what the head coach wants to do. And that's why it's a lot of recruiting, it's a lot of doing the stuff that your head coach doesn't want to do as far as the relations with the NIL collectives or in companies endorsing your players and what they have put on their plate. It really, like that spot, there's a lot of teams that are making hires just because they're like, oh, we need one. This is somebody who's a name. You have got to be in lockstep with your head coach because mm-hmm. if you don't have that, you're toast. You really are.
Oh, I 100% agree. The other part of this that's interesting, it's not just the GM side, it's the coach's side. There are Kevin Young left during the season last year to take the job at BYU.
Yeah.
You're looking at guys like Sam Cassell, who's been floated around as a longtime head coach candidate and never gotten the opportunity to replace. God, what's the head coach at Florida State? I totally blanked on his name.
Basketball coach?
Leonard Hamilton, yeah. Who's been at Florida State for a long time. He's put guys like Jonathan Isaac, Scotty Barnes.
Dude, he's like a million years old and yes. He looks like he's 65.
Yeah, but he's like particular stylings. And of course, Cassell's a FSU alum. But there's a lot of those guys. Chris Quinn, an assistant for Eric Spoelstra, is very likely to succeed Jim Larranega at Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Stay in the same city. You've got a lot of power in that city, in that market. You've got a lot of relationships in that market. But what was once seen as a demotion is no longer seen that way.
No, and that has, I mean, as the pay has gone up and mm-hmm. now you are also in the world of recruiting, it's like a lot like professional sports where you just are in ego management now. Like that's what you have to do. And it used to be coaches that would put their thumb on the scale and they were, I have the power, you have nowhere to go. It was a different type of coach that was successful in the college ranks. That is changing to more of the NBA style, which is, hey, if you want to get to the NBA where you can continue to make a lot of money, this is what you need to do. And that's how you manage an NBA roster, right? Because it's not like, hey, this is how you get to the money. It's, okay, you're in the NBA now. You want to make more money?
How do you get your second contract, third contract? How do you get extensions?
Yep.
And it's not just the promotion move, like an assistant on an NBA bench going to be a head coach. Nate Oates' staff at Alabama features three former NBA assistant coaches that left the NBA to come be on Nate Oates' staff in college as assistants.
Well, NBA assistants don't make a ton of money.
It depends on which team you play for or what team you coach for.
Yeah, I know, but
that's also a thing.
They don't. It's same as college. Now the college separation between the Power Four and then the basketball committed conferences, which are all four of them.
Yep.
The ACC and Big 12, they're just as committed to basketball as the Big 10 and the SEC. Just look at the way the Big 12 expanded.
Yep. And then you throw in the Big East there that is just a basketball conference.
And they're sitting there and they're going, all right, we have the money to do it. Let's pump it into our basketball programs. Mm-hmm. And coach salary goes up. And it's an easier pathway to get a head coaching job. And all of those guys, you can always go back to being an assistant in the NBA once that door has been opened for you, too.
Yeah, you go be a successful assistant or head coach in college basketball. What are we seeing in the NFL? You're seeing NFL mine the younger ranks for the bright mind, the creative person. Like, Eric Spoelstra was a video guy.
Mm-hmm.
Before he gets to Miami, and Pat Riley singularly found him, brought him to Miami, and went nose to nose with LeBron James and told him to get bent when LeBron demanded he be fired.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you see a lot of the bouncing back and forth too, that's going to become more prominent. I mean, Oregon just hired their replacement for Junior Adams, wide receivers coach. Mm-hmm. They got Ross Douglas from Syracuse, who is one of the upcoming coaches in college football as a wide receivers coach. He was the Patriots wide receivers coach 2 years ago. So the final year of Bill Belichick, Ross Douglas was the wide receivers coach. He'd worked kind of up through Belichick's weird coaching ranks that he has to go through. It's like a boot camp that you have to go through for several years. Was a receivers coach, then went to Syracuse last year where they had the number one passing offense in the country at Syracuse with Kyle McCord. But now that's where they went to go and make their hire, a guy who was an NFL position coach. He left to go be a position coach in college football. It wasn't like he went to go take a coordinator position. He left the NFL as a position coach to go and be a position coach at Syracuse.
And coming full circle, bringing up Bill Belichick, the epicenter for this in college basketball right now, hell, college sports right now, is Chapel Hill. It is North Carolina. Where this is emanating from is obviously Bill Belichick and them bringing in a GM and the Bible that he laid down. But on the basketball side, Hubert Davis is very, 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 very close to getting fired because North Carolina has been bad. Mitch Kupchak, formerly of the
Lakers GM.
Yes, and Charlotte Hornets and North Carolina Tar Heel, is leading the search for their GM. Again, former NBA front office member.
Yeah,
leading the search for the GM that's going to run the North Carolina Tar Heels basketball program.
That could be so because it is so different. Mm-hmm. It is not a there is a slippery slope that they are on where they could be like, well, worked in the NBA. Why would? Well, because it's not the same
job. It's professional.
Job. It is a completely different job with a completely different skill set, and having the $20.5 million cap. That's nothing. Like, I saw Jen Cohen, the USC AD. She had did an interview, and I saw that she said, we have no idea, or she doesn't have a good idea of where NIL is going. NIL is going nowhere. It's not going anywhere. Mm. Like, right now, everybody's like, no, NIL is just going to stay the same. You're going to have your cap within the athletic department. They can still go get endorsements elsewhere,
anywhere else. Yeah.
And it's good. Like, that changes. It's not like a professional sports league. It's completely different.
No, but again, this stuff is all getting really interesting.
It's just the same name. Mm-hmm. It's the same name. It's a general manager.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's the same.
All right, coming up next in hour number three, Is the NBA ready for expansion? We're getting close, folks. Let's dive into that. Coming up next on Danny and Dusty, Today the Fan.